I'm so sorry that my timing's off, but I can't move on if we're still gonna talk. Is it wrong for me to not want half? I want all of you, all the strings attached. Oh, I'm good at keeping my distance. I know that you're the feeling I'm missing. You know that I hate to admit it, but everything means nothing if I can't have you.
Chapter 12. The Curtains Drawn. He moved out immediately. It wasn't hard. Mike and Nemuri insisted on coming along, which, okay, a little fucking hard. So they brought 2 6-packs and Mike's speakers and made an afternoon of it, peeling the eviction notice from his door with his pocket knife and facing down the grimy, painful diorama of his absolute failure to cope. Neither of them said anything besides, "Let's do it." Shota absolutely didn't feel any stupid stinging in his eyes because of it. They just did it. Together. Any unopened boxes went directly in the trash, because if he hadn't needed it in a year, it was better just to purge the woulds and shoulds. The three of them returned the evil, busted armchair to the alleyway behind his building, via the balcony, screaming with spite. So the brats on the third floor could use it for target practice, and the rest of his shit fit in a box that Nemuri could lift with one arm. As a final blow, Shota used his shockingly disposable income to hire a professional cleaning service to exercise the place. Maybe more pricked at the idea of leaving any of himself, that self, behind than forfeiting his deposit for the mess. And tipsily offered a sinful cash order to the building manager for his unpaid rent. Bowing low in her doorway, he asked forgiveness for any trouble he had caused her and her shit-heel rat motel. He left out that last part. Barely, and only because Nemuri and Mike's giggling and guffawing around the corner distracted him. Walking back to the rental car with his dusty futon under his arm, his friends already arguing about who was going to share their bathroom when they all knew it would be Nemuri, it already felt a little more like home. Settling in should have been as easy as dumping the contents of his box on the floor of the spare room, but transitions had never been Shota's specialty. The spare room wasn't so spare, either. Mike's clear elation at having him back in the apartment didn't manage to cancel out the fact that his friend had given up his makeshift radio studio for it. For him. Shota could have easily sunk into unspoken misery and guilt, questioning the cost of his presence and the defeat that led to it. But something about what he'd survived made it possible to say, thank you. It didn't feel like enough, of course. He still didn't feel like enough. But the way Hizashi dropped his spare speaker and pulled him into a tight, teary hug made it clear he was moving in the right direction. Not just moving. His friends were proud of him, and that gave him a little more room to be proud of himself. Then he could afford to take some time off, so he did. Fucking wild. Disoriented by the sheer possibility of the decision, Shota sequestered himself away from his best friend's celebration and shrill excitement in record time, begging sleep when all he did was lay in his new room, thinking. Existing. He felt careful, somehow surreal or suspended in a new state he doubted the veracity of. He wasn't bruised or broken. He wasn't worrying about money. He wasn't sweating to death. He even had eye drops, because he'd found a stash in a kitchen drawer on the way out. The only thing he was worried about was dust. And yeah, maybe that money. Because 1 week after the Tokyo charity ball, All Might's agency announced an emergency press meeting. First, it made waves because of the time, 11:30 p.m., when there was an on-running joke that All Might Tower closed at 5 p.m. every night to give all the hardworking citizens a dinner with their family. In line with this odd time, the agency requested viewer discretion. This was not something for the youngest of them. This was not an appearance. This was an appeal. Even as the Hero Talk message boards clamored with questions and predictions, Tokyo itself seemed to quiet and grow careful with the setting sun, parents hurrying their children to bed and bracing themselves for something unfit for the light of day. So Shoto watched the conference. He had to. Had to make noise about not watching it, had to leave Hizashi and Nomuri glued to the TV screen in the next room, while he hid in his room and streamed on his new phone, mouth dry and heart pounding, half dizzy and all the way sick. Hopeful, worst of all. The room stirred in surprise when All Might himself ascended the podium where his press manager usually stood, dwarfing the stand into a prop and tweaking the microphone. His welcome was brief, and the announcement of the arrival of a new street drug had every representative in the room scrambling for pens. All Might explained, curt and factual, gleaming grin nowhere to be found. Dust. A propellant gas, routinely presenting pink to the naked eye, and absorbed by inhalation. Likely quirk-based, but engineered into a chemical attack that included unconsciousness to allow for onset. Wielded by organized gangs to distract and defeat. Then the effects. The fallout. Forced intimacy. Survival sex. Emotionally compromised. Hypnotized, drugged, addled. Obsessed and humiliated and arrested or locked into small, dark places to sweat and seize it out. And then carry on risking body and mind in order to make rent. Helpless, hurting most of all. In reports such as these, especially concerning crises both terrible and sudden, I understand the need for reliable information. Credible sources. The press room was dead silent after such a staggering download, above and beyond the shocking information it contained. Normally, something like this would be handled by an investigator and other private channels. Normally, All Might rarely made announcements beyond personal appearances and publicity stunts. And the assembled crowd was clearly reeling from the departure in their Sunny Heroes brand. Then there was his tone, his unsmiling face. It was no exaggeration to say no camera had ever caught this strict, determined side of him before. Most people who had glimpsed it were in prison on life sentences, and they had no wish to remember. Facing down a room of slack-jawed press and representatives after admitting that licensed heroes had been forced to fuck in the streets for months and then arrested after, All Might forged on in the same deep, punishing monotone. My agency is scrupulous in their research, as always, and I owe much to my police contact for their assistance in finding heroes, dust survivors, who are willing to relive their experiences to add to our knowledge and assist in our efforts to find the villains responsible and wipe this menace from the streets forever. All of that information will figure into the official report and Dust Initiative, which launches tomorrow. Today, rather. But I will not be releasing any names or sources. Not today, or any day after. Whispers started. The tension in the press room was so thick, Shota felt it through the screen like a staticky hand locked around his throat. Despite the hour and the air conditioner humming above him, he felt icy sweat streak down his sides, and his toes dug into his futon. All the way across town, All Might frowned down at the podium and closed his folder, staring out at the cameras and the nation. In order to protect the privacy of the most vulnerable among us and impress upon you the absolutely arbitrary nature of this epidemic, I will not be naming anyone but myself. I experienced all of this personally after my exposure at the hands of art smugglers 2 months ago, when I was saved from my ignorance by a member of the underground community, a hero like me, yet denied every resource and common consideration in the worst of a scourge no one wanted to admit existed. Shota was frozen, hands cramped around his phone. Over the banging of his heart in his ears, he heard Mike squawk a curse in the living room, and instant chaos erupted on screen. Papers flew into the air, microphones surging towards the podium, in the resulting rabble as reporters pushed in, crowding, shouting, "You were saved? Are we to assume you had a partner, All Might? Who is she? Who is she? Can you tell us one thing about her? Is she here? All Might-sama, who saved you?" But All Might raised his hand. All it took was one glint of icy anger in the symbol of Peace's noble countenance, perfect teeth bared, and everyone shut right the fuck up. When he spoke, his voice was dark and deep and furious. "The things that I have endured could not hold a candle to the fear and pain these heroes suffer daily, and I will not abide any line of questioning that seeks to continue this cycle of abject humiliation and weaponized intimacy. Consider your priorities wisely, or I will, in turn, consider you an obstacle to finding justice for every civil servant who has suffered under this drug. I am not done." If any of the assembled press were praying people, they probably spent a long time on their knees that night. It felt like dead-eyed condemnation from the pillar of goodness itself, and it stung, and no one said another thing. All Might waited, staring out at the press and the cameras with a vicious expectation, will-o-wisp eyes burning cold, as if daring anyone to make a sound. When he was satisfied with the wounded silence, he took a deep, bracing breath, caught like a rising tide by the hot microphone. "Before I bring in the police chief and open the floor for questions, I'd like to take a minute to speak to you about professional courtesy." On his belly, on his futon, Shota immediately choked on a mouthful of soda. He tossed his phone to safety and hacked and coughed so violently that his door flew open a moment later and bodies fell to either side of him. As Shota single-mindedly wiped his hands clean and scrambled around his legs and arms for his dropped phone, Namuri whacked his back. "All right, honey. Hey, breathe, buddy." Shota hissed and righted his phone, hunkering down into his pillow with his watery eyes locked on the screen. To either side of him, Namuri and Hizashi automatically leaned in. "Hey," Hizashi whined, pointing. "That's what we're watching out there. Why are you..." Shota grabbed his long, loose, blonde hair and yanked. A very direct order to shut up. And they all sat, wrapped, crowded onto a single futon as All Might began to speak. "Professional courtesy is a mutual understanding of a profession or situation, and, properly applied, a guiding empathy. Professional courtesy encompasses every kindness and allowance that one may give another soul laboring in the same field, knowing intimately how the system works, or in this case, does not work." Shota felt Hizashi and Namuri exchange a look over the top of his head, and he didn't need the carbonated burn in his throat to hold his breath. For the first time, through a screen, Shota felt like he was seeing him. He wasn't fearful, not necessarily, but worried. Worried for him, for All Might. And he strained to understand that new feeling alongside his growing terror of whatever the hell was coming next. "Before this moment, before the beginning of this difficult month, I had no idea that people who shouldered the title of hero could live in such different worlds. I had heard of trouble. But in Tokyo, there's usually trouble and my dance card is always a little full, so..." There were some small, shrill laughs in the background, desperately awkward and quickly stifled. But the hardness in All Might's dark eyes never flickered. "I couldn't empathize, due to my ignorance, but now I know. I know what Dust has done to the community ties of the underground and intern network. Splintering teams and relationships through the fear of losing ownership over your own body, your own dignity, or even patrolling alone and becoming a danger to someone else. I know of those who did come forward to their agencies and were told to stay silent out of fear of bad publicity. But worst of all is the financial lacking in those networks that made it so spectacularly, hatefully difficult for these brave souls to rise above it and call for help. It must have seemed like no one was listening, a presumption that heroes shouldn't have to be saved. Next to him, Nemuri gasped and fumbled with her own phone as it buzzed, silencing it. He would later learn it was a call from Yumi, her nurse X, who was losing her mind just like everyone else on their level of the pro ladder. Shota's heart was pounding, and it felt like every beat was pulling him an inch above his sheets to float and stare and hold his breath. This was just about Dust. He didn't have to do this. It wasn't necessary, and only circumstantially related. He didn't have to, but he was. I've called this conference because I'm listening. I am here. All Might let that promise ring through the room, unflinchingly tying his very legacy to the struggle of heroes who had never seen the light of a camera. I am here, the same way I was there, with you, and I can't let another soul walk into those conditions without raising hell. So, in the spirit of professional courtesy, I am entrusting a number of random subcontracted, or so-called underground heroes from 8 Tokyo wards with approximately 28 million yen. There was a gasp across the crowd. The cameras flashed even harder. This sum comes plainly from my agency's accounts and will be indicated only by professional courtesy in the transfer tag. In keeping with my earlier statements, names will not be given. The room erupted again. Whether through the sheer amount of money or the lack of accountability. Reporters were shouting questions over one another, but All Might banged his hand down on the podium. Why, you ask? He boomed, demanded, torn between desire and fear of the hero's physical strength as he had for weeks. Shota finally saw the other side of the massive power All Might held. The power over the room, the power to sway and speak and be heard. Until that moment, maybe a part of him hadn't believed that anything would change, no matter who said what. That moment of hope felt like a yen being dropped, glinting into a well of resignation and dread that he hadn't realized went so goddamn deep. With this money comes a task, the hero continued, calm with thousands of eyes and hopes pinned on him. Each hero has received instructions to take it to their pro clinic of choice, to be used for supplies and staffing and anything else. I do not need their names because I do not intend to follow up with them. I trust implicitly that they will do this, even in anonymity, not only because they are heroes, but because they know what is at stake. They want to live, and they want others to live, free of terror, and that is why I am going about it this way, for the nation to see that it is a hurt widespread enough, prevalent enough, and silent enough that only community matters, because only their community has saved them from the dust in the face of our neglect and our shame. There was no applause, and All Might didn't wait for it to come. He didn't need it, Shota realized. In the silence, the symbol of peace gathered his folders and stepped aside to give a brief, stiff bow. Thank you for your time and your attendance, despite the late hour. The chief will now take questions. Hizashi was already blabbering 1,000 miles an hour, but it all mixed together with the sound of 12 reporters clamoring for answers, and Shota couldn't make out a word either way. He was too busy with the crack of doubt that had opened in the rush of amazement, hammered wider by the second as things didn't add up, literally. Oh, shit. It was Nemuri, low and worried and right on time. Shota winced and looked away so he wouldn't have to see her biting her lip. Wait, Sho. He just shook his head, trying to remember the details of the transfer tag through the euphoria of seeing those numbers anywhere near his account. Fuck. Now he didn't even want to check. No instructions, he mumbled, frowning. And after a second, he let the phone fall from his hands. The sick feeling was back. No, no, see, this is great, Hizashi insisted, scrambling free of their pile with a gleeful grin and rapping his finger against the screen. This is rad. Just think about what he said, the way he said it.
What do you mean?
Nemori asked faintly, like she didn't have her nails dug into Shota's back. Hizashi looked entirely too glad to tell them, throwing his loose hair back with a flourish and righting his glasses. All Might is always exact, especially when it comes to public resources. Listen to his language. Random, approximate. He didn't even specify how many heroes he chose. He's giving himself room. He's avoiding exact numbers and banning names in what's essentially a really amazing, most appreciated ever publicity stunt. And I'll bet you a gazillion to one it's to hide your payload in the haystack. But no one's gonna have the balls to look into it because...
Because it's him.
Nemori finished in a whisper, shaking his shoulder and squeezing. Shota could hear the stunned smile in her voice, and his inside soared as it all fit together. He put his face in his hands and breathed out, equally floored.
Holy fucking shit. Just shit.
It was the nature of the world that there was a terribly low success rate of complete anonymity whenever this much money exchanged hands, especially when the financial information of the top 10 heroes was considered common knowledge. Now, the last of the nagging worry that followed Shota's mania and the move disappeared in a cleansing flash, followed by a rush of gratefulness, disbelief, and dawning awe as he realized. All Might had somehow retrofitted a stupid personal joke to a charitable, paradigm-shifting power move, which was already in very bad faith to investigate or question, in order to hide what could be seen as an indiscriminate and suspicious transfer of money to a beleaguered Dust Bunny partner that nobody could know about. Shota's first thought was this.
He's fucking smart.
His second thought was this.
He's gonna do this. He's actually going to pull this off.
Before he knew it, he was laughing. They were all laughing. Maybe it was the choking and coughing from the inhaled soda earlier, or the emotional whiplash of his entire world changing 10 times in 10 minutes, but his laugh suddenly sounded a lot like a sob. Shota's body locked up all at once, shaking, and far away, at the end of his arms, he could feel his fingers trying to grip and rip through his sheets. Nemuri gathered him to her chest without a word, and before Shota knew it, he was shaking, hot tears streaming down his cheeks as he grasped for her hand and crushed it, hanging on. Hizashi's arms encircled them both, and the three of them reeled together, airless at the idea of a life without Dust. They believed they'd never be helpless like that again, the same way they believed that every hero who received a retirement's worth of yen would run to the nearest clinic because they wanted, needed to help. They watched a little more, eyes glazing over as they drifted away from the increasingly technical press conference and into imagining what a world without Dust would be like. It had only been a few months, and yet their worldview had been fucked over so drastically, it took them a minute to even dream. Then Hizashi, eyes watery, straightened and fanned his hands atop his head and took a deep breath. Oh, All Might! All Might! He sang, pistoning his arms up and down with the beginning of the absolutely horrible number one theme song, and both of them tried to put their hands over his mouth at the same time. He relented with a garbled protest, giggling and falling back into their pile and spitting an errant finger out of his mouth. There was quiet, then a shared sigh.
Holy shit, All Might saves the day again.
Nemuri murmured, curling up behind him. The faintly floral sweetness of her shampoo washed over him, and he relaxed, nodding shakily. As if his body had refused to accept the possibility of safety until that very moment, it was trembling with aftershocks. He felt cracked, open, and vulnerable, but not in danger, surrounded by his friends. Safe, protected even, by a hero whose reach exceeded any man alive.
"And what do you think about Mr. All Night now, huh?"
Nemuri cooed, as if reading his thoughts, jostling him. Hizashi cackled, and Shota immediately grumbled and hid his face in his pillow.
"Look, even if you don't want to team up with him, even if he's pretty much buried the possibility of anyone sniffing you out as his sugar baby, I gotta say, you sure you don't want to date him?"
Hizashi asked, far too seriously, ignoring Shota's snorts and his best efforts to shove him off the bed, as Nemuri squealed encouragement.
"I mean it. You have a card for the tower, and a standing invitation, and the history."
He counted it all off on his fingers, like it was math and not insanity.
"And he looks, like, really dateable."
After the furious wrestling match that followed, they went out for fancy shabu-shabu to celebrate the death of Dust. Shota paid for everything. He didn't even look at the bill. It was the easiest and best thing he'd ever done.
"2 months." Spurred by the symbol of Peace's call to action, 2 months was all it took with the force of the Tokyo Police Department and assisting heroes behind the case, and Dust was on its way out even before that. The morning after the press announcement, in the wake of absolution and context, the floodgates opened. People lined up at their local stations, fresh off night shifts, and banging on the windows to be let in. Heard, seen. Heroes of all stripes brought in whatever they could to assist in the investigation, like uniforms they had been too afraid to wash or handle after a dusting, or one hero with a rare vacuum-type quirk who had managed to capture an actual sample. First, it was specialty sealed masks to prevent gas inhalation, but the design fell short when it came to heteromorphic heroes. There was a higher percentage of heteromorphs in the underground business. Always had been. And those who respired through their skin or held other aquatic-type traits had been hit the hardest by Dust. All Might, unapologetically prowling at the edges of every stage of the process, was the first to demand a solution that worked for all of them. After that, Biohazard and the most renowned labs in the city got involved, along with a quirk specialist from North America named S.H.I.E.L.D. By the end of the summer, Shota was standing in line with Nemuri and Hizashi at their local clinic to get the first round of resistance shots. It was a temporary immunity, they said, cautioning them on the experimental nature of it. But not a single registered hero refused, and the technicians got more wild, sweaty, tearful embraces than they bargained for. Definitely not their usual reaction from a bitch of an injection that hurt for days. Hizashi didn't even squeal when he got his, and his hatred of needles was legendary. There was a gag in Recovery Girl's office. It had seen a lot of use during their school days, and even launched one support course student's career in sound-canceling technology. Hizashi was, he maintained, a relentlessly inspiring individual. They were just so ready to be done with this shit. The heroes, their families, all of them, in every way, and it was finally happening. Shota wasn't involved in any of it beyond the empty folder where his gang case file used to be, and that felt good. It felt good to trust and wait. Unreal, yes, but good. Food, also good. Bed, very good. The ability to do his shit like he'd wanted to in the first place and work and clean up the streets and be grateful for a simple bloody nose at the end of the night. A bloody nose he could sloppily stuff with gauze like he usually did, or go to the clinic for. amazing. It almost made it possible to ignore the hellscape of drama and rumors that sprang up in the underground overnight, turning Hiro's personal information into gold. The search was on for All Might's Dust Bunny lover, because any request for names was declined by the agency, and the requesters sternly scolded by Sir Nighteye. The agents had to be tracked down by greasing the palms of the receiving clinic employees, who may or may not have told the truth. It wasn't long until rewards were offered, exposing the extent and desperate fervor of All Might's popularity. Every publication of every level of respectability was banging and pleading for any scrap of knowledge as to who had been entangled with the symbol of peace in such a terrible, dehumanizing, and scintillating way for the hottest, wettest months of summer. They had to know how it felt to have the hero of Japan falling to his knees, drunk with love in such a terrible way. And any paper that valued their market worth quickly stopped being concerned with the truth in favor of answers. Shota even wondered if All Might's agency, genius in terms of marketing, had tactfully encouraged one or two women to come forward and keep attention high and eyes elsewhere. The exposés and confessions of being All Might's tragic dust lover didn't fit the underground heroes he knew. But maybe fame did that to a person. And maybe, just maybe, Shota found himself looking at All Might a little differently because of it. As for Shota, he was amused to have one journalist, or so he assumed, clipboard and all, approach his local coffee shop. He looked down at his papers and left with a thoroughly exhausted look, without even cracking the door. Shota had to laugh. He hadn't shaved in a week, and he definitely wasn't All Might's type. Who would have thought his natural appearance was the best bit of subterfuge they had? It made him feel a little safer looking to the sky and looking for him. He found himself in the daylight more often, teaming up with Mike and Namuri. He couldn't deny that it came with the chance of crossing paths with All Might, though he'd taken notes regarding what tier of battles he was fit for and which ones would just add him to the number of people to save. For the first time in his life, Shota was actually disappointed when rushing to a scene with every villain apprehended and that name on everyone's lips. All Might. All Might. Done. Already come and gone. Once again, the symbol of peace was just that. A symbol. A billboard. A rush of wind and color and an aspiring standard. The gap between the two of them widened. Absolute. As the city seemed to turn their eyes to and understand heroes on Shota's level for the first time. There was a positive and enduring side to the tabloid chaos. Carried in a heaping spoonful of sugar and pulpy intrigue, people saw the neglect, the tragedies, the pain, the poverty. People read every story that dropped. Nobody could stop talking about it. And more heroes came forward for interviews about their lives. A typically closed profession opened and unattractive truths came out. Politicians clamored and built platforms on equality and protecting the protectors. That year, the Empowering Pros program began. Things changed. Life got better. Life got better, and sometimes Shota got a little drunk, took the key card out and jacked off to it. More specifically, to the idea of being led by the hand up to the top floor of Might Tower and thrown into a continent of a bed where he made a new home, spending his days sleeping and his nights being fucked in half. In this fantasy, he had a new job, well-earned stress relief for a top hero who had everything else. Maybe there was a jacuzzi involved. Who knew? It was all fantasy, because it could never really work. He knew that and never bothered to ask himself if he wanted it to. So he worked and worked and worked. And one day in early September, he finally managed to catch him. It was just an instant, locking eyes across the rooftops after an incident downtown. But as his stomach leapt in victory, Shota had to confront the fact that he had no idea what to do after secretly striving to be seen in a crowd of thousands. So he stared up at All Might as hard as he could, trying to radiate significance, and tore off running in the opposite direction, capture weapon streaming behind him. It was a stupid play, not so much a plan as a reflex. Shota had spent so long fleeing him, it was doubtful All Might would follow, or would even know to follow. It was more doubtful still to think the hero had any desire to speak to him after all of that. Being sober usually gave you your standards back, after all. But Shota still found jittery hope and anticipation squeezing his lungs from the bottom up as he clambered to the top of an alleyway a few blocks off, crouching behind a fire escape and waiting for a miracle. He didn't have to wait long. As miracles went, All Might was incredibly timely. There was a short gust of wind below him at the entrance of the alleyway, scattering stray newspapers across the clean concrete. Then footsteps in the quiet.
Eraser?
All Might ventured in with a nearly cartoonish caution, shoulders high and shadows stretching out a mile in front of him. He was a little smaller from up here, less intimidating. The older hero's red cape swayed around his calves as he scanned from left to right, but not up. He should know better. Shota, Eraserhead, slunk down onto the fire escape platform and held his breath as the metal creaked. His heart pounded. He pushed at his goggles, making sure they were settled and secure.
"Are you here, Eraser?"
All Might whisper called, extending a hand to the recycling bins and enclosing brick.
"I left the press behind, I can assure you. I'm not sure if you intended me to follow, but I thought..."
Shota waited until All Might was mostly underneath the fire escape before he dropped off the edge head first, his capture weapon zipping through his splayed fingers as he slid down and bounced to a halt right in front of All Might's nose.
"Hey." "Oh, my stars!"
All Might barked a laugh as he jumped back, a big hand to his chest.
"Look at you. You startled me. That's hard to do, my friend."
Shota flipped around and landed on his feet with a thump, leaving his capture weapon dangling behind him. When the narrow world righted, All Might was beaming at him, filling up the entire alleyway with a wide grin and one hand to his chin.
"There's an American hero with an entrance like that. Your styles are a bit similar, but I don't think you would care for him."
In front of the world's preeminent professional savior, Shota stood and stared and realized for the millionth time that he didn't have a plan. All Might jumped right in before he could worry about it, and it became clear that he was very eager to talk with Shota after all.
"So,"
he began with a clap of his hands, then winced apologetically and actually hushed himself. He glanced over his shoulder toward the mouth of the alley and ushered them further into the shadows. For privacy, presumably, despite it being daylight and his suit being his suit. It was kind of cute.
"How are you? How is it? Can you tell me any differences you've noticed? Things that are happening?"
All Might launched into a million questions, gesturing in a wild enthusiasm that would have driven the younger hero up a wall a month prior. His boisterous effect hadn't changed, not really, so Shota was forced to admit that he was the changed one in their equation. He saw now that All Might was glowing with eagerness to understand, to know, but with the firm edge of someone enthusiastically seeking solutions, not empty praise or publicity. It wasn't cute, Shota realized with a gulp. It was fucking hot.
"Now?"
some distant part of him demanded, equal parts enraged and aghast. "You're gonna get weak-kneed around him now? After all that?" It must have been some kind of record, managing to officially crush on the symbol of peace, only after alternatively fleeing from him and hate-fucking him for a month straight. Shota was exceptional in only the worst of ways, after all. Insanely aware of his own rasping breath, watching All Might through the slots in his goggles as he launched into his side of the story, Thoughts rushed through Shota's head. You're good. Way too good. I'm sorry you had to deal with me. Thank you. I didn't know you.
Was a fight to get on screen, but I pushed it. I didn't think anything else would do. Do you know if many of your co-workers...
You saved me.
Has been in constant communication. It's really impressive, but I haven't been able to look into the results as much as I'd like. What with the incident at the museum last week?
How can I tell you that you saved me? You saved all of us, and you put yourself on the line to do it. There was a them, now, however you sliced it. Shota fretted at the edges of it, not knowing how to parse the lines. He became more and more tense the longer the hero in front of him pontificated, and tenser still when All Might realized he was not actually pontificating back. Stop talking. Stop fucking talking, Shota thought as loudly as he could, vibrating with it. He watched, helplessly, as All Might's expressive face fell word by word, simple silence crunching his joy into uncertainty and prepackaged regret. Shota couldn't believe that his silence was enough to bend All Might, and his poor excuse for a heart contracted when the man visibly wilted, and he rubbed at his own arm, blue-starred gaze falling.
Did I misunderstand when you... or did something happen?
Nervous. The symbol of peace, the guardian of the known world, was nervous. And Shota was thoroughly done with the awkward empty space hanging between them. So he threw himself forward and wrapped his arms around All Might's enormous middle and hugged him, goggles clattering as he shoved his face into his chest. His entire self flashed hot and cold and embarrassed and grateful and intensity. The kind of internal intensity his battered body had blocked for survival interests ever since his first dusting in fear that it would burn him alive from the inside out. He heard All Might make a noise. Oh. And then shivered violently when those huge arms enfolded him with zero hesitation. The press of his cheek on the top of Shota's tangled hair almost made him go limp against the hero's broad chest. The faint, plasticky scent of his latex suit, far outpaced by the spicy, musky smell of his skin. It was just his calloused hands, the hollow of his neck, but it was so familiar. And now, after the charity ball and stripped of the sickening sweetness of marzipan, decidedly good. Oh, Eraser. His moniker, hushed and close, was more intimate than it had any right to be. Shota's face burned and his arms tightened.
Are they taking care of you? Is it getting better?
Shota nodded, making an affirmative sound, wrapped up, soaking in the older hero's warmth and shuddering to his own smallness, his savedness. Shota was unable to say how the old clinic was fully funded and under construction. The alleyway he had landed in, broken and confused, where he had insisted the hero drop him off like a trash bag, would be a recovery ward. They were sending in talk therapists. They were watching now. Caring.
Wonderful, All Might said, almost a sigh. You know if you ever need anything, my door is always open. Just use the card, Any hour of any day.
Nodding again, Shota's arms fell as All Might gave him a final kind pat on the back. He absently righted his goggles as he stepped away. He was so stunned he didn't realize he was staring at the ground until a hand under his chin raised his head.
What a smile, All Might said. I don't think I've ever seen one on you.
It had snuck up on him, dreamy and glad and entirely involuntary. Then there was nothing but mortified, paralyzing heat at the softness in All Might's shadowed gaze, as the older hero brushed the messy hair from Shota's face, calloused fingers trickling down his scruffy cheek. Shota's heart squirmed, and specifically toward him, hungry for the kind of soft touch they had shared at the very end, naked on heirlooms and ducking any responsibility but their pleasurable amends. Faster than his eye could track, That gentle hand snapped into a thumbs up, and All Might grinned, another hand holstered jauntily on his hip.
When you smile like that, it makes me feel braver than I have in a long time. So thank you for reminding me of that important feeling, Eraserhead. I'll carry it with me always.
Shota stared up at him, dead-eyed behind his goggles, as his entire self turned inside out at the killing dose of wholesomeness delivered by the man in front of him. All at once, he was acutely, murderously annoyed, and he had very poor impulse control when annoyed. Shota yanked All Might down by the collar and shoved their mouths together. All Might yelped in surprise, and he countered it with a swipe of his tongue, mouth shamelessly open and reaching. One more choked noise, and All Might's stiff monolith of a body loosened all at once, welding to his as the older hero bent and kissed him deeply. A big hand spanned his lower back and pulled him up off his feet, so Shota was blissfully weightless as the shifting liquid press of their kiss turned his gut into shivering gold. It was a kind of kiss and a kind of skill that he would never, ever find a match for. Not that he would really try. Shota memorized it all in waves, the slightly sticky texture of All Might's suit against his palms, as his arms wrapped around his mile-wide shoulders, the roughness of his palm cupping his cheek, and the delicious answering prickle across his scalp. He wanted to lean into it with everything he had, but then his back met the wall. It was just a little bump. Shota felt his dangling capture weapon trail over his knuckles as he reached out to steady them, and he automatically grasped for it, fumbling it into his fist. It woke him up. Was this the way he thanked people? Dysfunctional. Shota pulled away with a crisp noise that sent shivers down his back. All Might was almost panting, will-o-wisp eyes half-lidded and pinned low to the side. He was blushing riotously, and that only made Shota even more embarrassed and incapable of words, jaw locked.
"You have an interesting way of thanking people," All Might mumbled after a moment, a guilty smile tugging at his mouth, like he didn't know whether he was allowed to enjoy that or not.
Shota made a note to be a better person. Later.
Yeah, he said.
All of his retorting abilities had clearly abandoned him, and it was a struggle not to kiss the man again, seeing his lips wet like that. Shota took an instant to memorize the strength of All Might's arms and the feeling of being held.
Now run, before the press get you.
All Might blinked at him. Shota yanked his capture weapon taut and tensed, popping up out of the veteran hero's grip and reeling himself up the brick wall. He vaulted over the lip of the roof and hit hard, chased by the fear and simple daring of what he had just done. As he sprawled there, recovering, he could hear All Might's laugh ring out below, loud and happy and not half as irritating as it was before.
"I hope we can team up one day, my friend. I really do,"
he called, trailing off with a pleased chuckle and then a hum. Shota could almost hear him tapping his chin and frowning.
Goodness, I really do have to get back there and give a statement. Or do I? Hell, there are so many better things to be doing. Maybe some tea? Yes, I think so. Genmaicha sounds amazing on a day like today, and I know just the place.
For the second time that day, a silly smile snuck up on Shota, as did a weird kind of pride for the man who belonged to the world, taking an autumn afternoon and a cup of tea for himself. Maybe they'd rubbed off on each other in more lasting ways than dust required. It wasn't a bad thought. If there was one man who needed some selfishness in his life, it was All Might. Shota contented himself with the fact that at least he'd left the other hero with something other than bad memories, and had managed to thank him after everything. As he swung off, he had one thought in his head. Smiling felt good, new and good, and he was actually interested in learning more about it. 2 years passed in license renewals and birthdays and minutia, as time usually did. Midnight had started her very own agency. It was brutally understaffed, and she was plotting recruitment of high school students on an internship/social service reward system to fill the gap. But it was real and functional, with front doors and an email address, and a burgeoning heteromorph-inclusive bespoke sex toy business, of course. Mike had no such goals, but kept his license current and did the odd job now and then. He even spent a month in the U.S., working and playing, and came back talking about teaching. But he talked about a lot of things all of the time. After a shitload of networking and equipment insurance, he was running his radio show on Tokyo FM. Friday nights, nonstop nonsense with Put Your Hands Up Radio. Shoto was proud of them, though he didn't say so. They should know anyway. It had been a long time, and they'd been through hell. Sometimes, especially in winter, while catching a snack at the street stalls before his patrol, Shoto would smell sweet roasted almonds and remember. As for himself, the most he could say was that he had been helping. It was exhausting and rewarding, but he had a bed to come home to. He'd helped put some major cases in the ground and the responsible villains behind bars after due process, but generally found more mileage with night patrol. Rent wasn't really an issue after the Empower Pros program took off, and housing vouchers were available for any subcontracted pro and all sidekicks. And that left him free to focus on work and peace and terrorizing whatever petty criminals had the balls to make chaos at night in his neighborhood. He hadn't quit smoking yet, but he was working on it. He was working on himself, and with much less anger and more humbleness than before. Nimrodi said he'd mellowed, but really he was just tired. Shota didn't chase All Might anymore, but he didn't run from him either. They separated naturally, day to night, and the card stayed in the drawer. They still crossed paths once or twice, and Shota wondered if that same instinctive something that drove dust partners together still lingered between them, an echo of it locking their eyes across a crowd of people almost instantly like two hands fitting together in perfect form. At the ass end of 4 a.m. and his last hour of patrol, Shota perched himself on a balcony of an office building and looked over the sprawl of Shiodome District, glittering in the black of night, and thought about fate. The wind cut through his jumpsuit and battered his capture weapon around, grating against his numb cheek. His hands were freezing, so he only hesitated a second before fumbling a cigarette out, lit it, and inhaled. He held it, letting the warmth seep through his sore chest as he stuffed his hands beneath his armpits, shivering. He was on his way home and hungry for something hot, but something left him surveying the city 10 stories down. He thought about numbers and probability. He thought about people and connection and circumstances. Looking back, maybe the same thing that had led All Might to that alley months after the hot pink burn faded was the thing that found him on that balcony that night, at that exact time, outside of his usual patrol range. But before Shota could spare a clear thought toward what kept bringing the two of them together over and over again, or how he really felt about it, there was an explosion. A flash of white split the skyline about a mile away, followed by a distant boom and a plume of dust. Shota tensed and instantly secured his reins around the balcony landing, flicking his cigarette to the side. He was already reaching for his phone when there was a second impact right below him, shaking the very balcony beneath his ice-crusted boots, making him slip and curse. He swept the sky for projectiles first, trying to run the numbers and protocols in his head with his heart gushing hateful adrenaline. But it was just a cold, static dome of stars above him. No movement. The city, otherwise silent. He looked down and found the cause of the crash immediately. At the base of the next building over, an enormous muscled figure was enthroned in a crater of concrete and layered in dust so heavy that the red, blue, and yellow of his hero suit was almost unrecognizable. His golden head was bowed, crest mangled, and Shota heard him coughing through the rush of freed concrete clattering to the ground around him. It just wasn't possible to consider that he had been thrown from a mile away at the source of the initial explosion, or what kind of power or quirk would be capable of such raw strength. Shota's mind refused to connect the two. All he saw was All Might, broken and bleeding, for the first time, and he nearly slipped and died, rappelling down the building at breakneck speed. By the time Shota reached the ground, All Might's head had fallen back against the broken wall, blood running from his open mouth, and his breath puffing white into icy air. His face was contorted in pain. Shota couldn't see the guiding laser glint of his eyes, and for some reason that scared him shitless. Even more than the next explosion that shook the street half a mile away, sending the ghoulish light of the street lamps swerving and flickering. All Might, he hissed, striding and then running towards him, falling to his knees where the number one hero was crumpled against the wall. All Might, hey! The mammoth man twitched, concrete shrapnel tumbling off his bulging shoulders as he drew in a difficult, crackling breath. Shota's bare hands hovered above his slack limbs and torn primary colored suit, afraid to touch, afraid he might come out of it swinging. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? He shouted, breath clouding the air between them. It's Eraserhead. All Might, what's happening?
Eraserhead?
His voice was little more than gravel as he roused. Then All Might's eyes shot open, burning blue. He lurched forward, face warped with ferocious urgency. He gripped Shota's arm so hard he felt the bones in his forearm creak.
Run, he growled, deep and wet in his throat. You need to run.
Tell me what's going on, Shota grit out, voice cracking from the crushing pain in his arm. He fumbled and pried All Might's grip off him, an act made possible by the terrible way the big hero doubled over, clutching his left side with a sudden animal shiver of pain. Even in the weak ambient light, Shota could see how pale he was. Blood and dust caked his face, sweat pricking that dirty mask and rolling down his cheeks.
You're hurt,
he said. It was more for himself, to make it real, to have such an invincible man folded in half at his feet. All Might didn't hear him, or his only response was a faint groan and a repeated order,
Go, run, now, I'm telling you to run!
Fear, and then anger, familiar, rushed him, and that last emotion unlocked his limbs and his head. Stupid man! Stupid, stubborn man! Is there an attack? He demanded, pressing on. He needed to know the landscape, the situation, and who to call. Was there anyone to fucking call? How many villains are we dealing with, and what are we doing about the civilians? That seemed to trigger something, and All Might looked up, around, at the lights beginning to flash on and in the apartment buildings towering around them.
You need to get everyone out. Total evacuation. Highest level emergency. Tell them it's a bomb. A gas leak. Just get them all out.
All Might struggled out of the rubble as he spoke, clawing forward and trying to stand. Before Shota could draw back or give him room, he fell, coughing. All Might crashed to one knee and bent, blood falling from his mouth in great wet gluts and splattering black on the street in the moonlight.
Don't talk like you're going back there to fight,
Shota snapped, grabbing for his shoulders to steady him. He was too big to hold, always had been, and Shota's eyes were locked on the spreading blood.
You need help. This is how you can help me, All Might rasped,
reaching back into one of his belt packs and fumbling his phone out and pressing it into Shota's hand. The screen was cracked but still illuminated, sputtering. Something blinked urgently. Aizawa grabbed it and tried not to think about how wet it was or how warm the wetness was. He could see it seeping into the hairpin cracks on the screen and steaming into the air in thin wisps. Fresh.
I have an override on pin. All the top 10 do.
All Might continued, sucking in breath after breath, just to form words. He looked up into the sky, and just the rage on his face was breathtaking.
There's no signal here. He made sure of that. So I need you to take this out of his range and activate the override. It will lock up anyone's phone who's on duty with an order to...
Nobody uses PIN anymore. Shota hissed, cutting himself off and forcing the phone back into his hand. The knot of dread in his throat, metallic, threatened to choke him into silence, mind scrambling for a way out of this. It was the middle of the night, and the neighborhood was deserted except for the hundreds of civilians asleep in their beds, or those waking and looking fearfully out of their windows, thinking it was just another novice villain squabble. If it was an attack, they were horribly vulnerable right now. People were going to die. All Might was there, so everything should have been fine. But it wasn't. The biggest question sliced at the edges of Shota's mind, trying to carve a way into his cage of protocol and years of disaster training. What could truly scare a man like this?
It's all I can manage. Maybe some haven't deleted it yet. Anything will help if it just starts the evacuation.
All Might grunted with a shake of his head. He tried to stand again and stifled a curse when his legs shook violently. It was too much for Shota to watch. Forcing his shoulder under his arm and bracing as much of All Might's weight as he could, Shota saw all at once how broken he looked. His lip was curled in a snarl, his yellow crest of hair bent and dirty. His suit was split at the shoulders and peeled away from sticky, raw flesh. And Shota smelled burning, and his stomach folded. God damn it, All Might, call someone! He snapped, terror spilling over into fury at the hero's stubbornness. It was easier. It made him move, shout, demand, when all he wanted was to sink to the ground. Let someone help you. You obviously can't do this alone.
I'm not alone,
he whispered after too long a pause, hand over his heart. His eyes were closed, muscled body still and steaming.
I never am. That's my legacy, and so is this battle. It's what I was made for.
He's fucking lost it. With the symbol of peace checked out, speaking in tongues, all Shota could think of was a stupid appeal that felt as small as he was. It was the only thing he had to offer.
Then let me help you.
Shota said, digging his fingers into his arm for just a shard of All Might's terrifyingly calm attention. His numb body shook with how much he meant it, and he realized the only fear greater than joining the hero was that of leaving him alone to face whatever this was.
Right now, I need to help you. Please.
He was begging. Shota grabbed for his face with all the desperation and feeling he could manage, touching him, digging his fingers into his hair and forcing the hero to face him, calling him back. All Might just looked at him, eyes flickering and blood dripping off his chin, and gave in. He slumped infinitesimally and allowed Shota to grapple his arm properly over his shoulder, hauling them both upright. They started limping away, away from the massive crater and the pools of blood.
Come on, damn it, move!
We're not retreating, Shota thought frantically, scanning the skyline for any light or movement. We're just finding a place to strategize. His mind was so electrified with fear, he could only think one step ahead. So there was his only advantage, shot. And All Might was so goddamn heavy. How could a man carry himself with all this weight, let alone the world? An explosion sounded behind them, air flashing orange, heat soaked through the back of Shota's jumpsuit. All Might flinched and looked back, and Shota dragged them onward, spine torquing painfully from the sheer weight of the man leaning on him.
As soon as we get reception, we can send out the PIN override and call Best Genist. Maybe Endeavor. I'm assuming you have their personal lines.
He found himself muttering, looking nervously around him and wincing as All Might staggered and tripped on a piece of rubble. They only got a few more feet before the hero started shaking above him, deep voice rattling in staccato. It sounded like a cough at first, but he was laughing, wheezing in mirth. Shota gaped up at him.
Are you fucking crazy?
All Might's smile was no longer gleaming, dented by the blood in his teeth, but it was still broad, still strong.
I was just thinking, actually. Do you remember the scuffle with that kaiju villain? 5 stories tall, and you came at him with your binding cloth?
Of course, Shota muttered, funneling every part of himself into dragging All Might just one more inch. It had to be his own weakness. Why did it feel like the wounded hero was purposefully slowing them down, dragging his feet?
The way he threw you. You really should have tried to catch yourself on the way down. It's the only thing that makes sense in a cityscape. Plenty of ways to slow descent.
All Might's voice came in spurts with every painful step. His breath smelled like blood, even on the cold air. I wasn't exactly thinking straight that day, Shota snapped, struggling for air to walk and talk at the same time. Why the fuck are you talking strategy at a time like this? You better not be reminiscing because you're gonna die.
Mid-step, Shota felt something flat and hard drop into his jumpsuit pocket, and he looked down just as another explosion rocked the ground beneath them, concrete splintering into peaks and valleys with a horrifically deep, grinding sound that reverberated in the underground hero's bones. Shota cursed, bracing them, then hissed as his foot rolled sideways into a massive crack. He wasn't prepared for the huge, hot hands that came to grip his shoulders and lifted him from the crack like a paper doll. All Might held him in place, dangling by his jumpsuit, as the street shattered in a nauseating wave in front of them, and every lamplight flickered out, plunging them into darkness. In that void, a voice called. It was a voice Shota had never heard before, and one he could never quite hold in his head again. It was too mocking, too eerily joyful, and rotten with a century of stolen life. It felt like death and thickened the very air.
You realize that every block you run is another 100 souls on your conscience, All Might. I'm enjoying myself, but why prolong the inevitable? Or do you not wish to see her again and tell her personally how you failed?
Shota craned around towards the voice. Then he kicked out, struggling just above the ground as he caught sight of All Might's blank expression and knew he wouldn't be set down. The broken world pitched and swerved as the fist in his jumpsuit lifted him up and away, and he thrashed harder, gasping and grasping for the man he'd been dragging out of a war zone just a few seconds before. His fingers slipped off the hero's slick suit again and again. Dread swallowed him in seconds, and he realized he could practically hear All Might tensing, his boots scraping against the ground, the gravity shifting in his huge muscled form like an icy wave about to crash. All Might fucking no! Shota blurted out, still scrabbling and trying to cling to some part of him, even though this man's reach had no peer. The hero just smiled up at him, a small smile and real. He looked genuinely calm for an instant, even with blood in his teeth.
Please, Shota begged in a shout, entire body arcing toward him. You look well, Eraserhead,
All Might said quietly. Too quietly for the fires breaking out behind them, and the screech of ripping metal, and the wild, hateful laughter louder than all of it.
Please try to stay that way.
And All Might hurled him upward with the snap of his arm, and Shota's body became a painful smear of velocity and pressure, icy air tearing across his face. The next second he was falling in a sea of black, pinprick stars and city lights careening around him. He couldn't scream. He left his voice on the ground, and his throat was welded shut from the violent ascent. But he felt the shift in his insides as he peaked and floated for an instant. Time seemed to freeze. Then, seeking gravity, Shota ripped his capture weapon wide around his shoulders and let himself fall into the glittering sprawl of Tokyo, ice beating on his eyelids and breath scraping in his ears. Surveying and judging the skyline was quick. It had to be quick, or else he'd be dead. The top of a tower provided the initial anchoring point, which he swung around and flung himself off course, arms whipping and pulling, capture weapon tearing into his palms from the pull.
He methodically, manically caught himself on every water tower and outcropping, redirecting and swung and leached his momentum that way until he swerved sickeningly and crash-landed on a low rooftop, rolling to a stop. Shota reeled, gasping for air, hurting from bruises he didn't have yet. His head pounded, blood dripped from his nose, probably from the vicious change in altitude. Over. Far over. Fucking miles over. An entire section of the city was blacked out, lightless and flickering at the edges like ancient mold reaching to spread and eat and kill. Hands shaking, he reached into his pocket and pulled out All Might's phone and stared at it. The PIN override was still blinking at him, waiting. This was how he could help. Shota's thumb shook for an instant, hovering above the cracked and bloodstained screen. He pushed the red alarm icon. The phone vibrated, and the powerful shock went right to his bones and his heart. His fingers released, and the phone hit the ground with a sharp crack. Watching it rattle deafeningly across the rooftop, unknowing of where he was, Shota contracted, burying his face in his hands and sobbing as fear finally dragged him under. It tore through him, leaving him fisting into his filthy jumpsuit and shaking with what it took not to scream. The sky stood eerie in its stillness as the young hero's world splintered, more and more lights winking out as the dark circles spread and fed. As he watched through the thick tears, a building crumpled like clay and he fought for air. It was still far away, his logical mind knew. He wasn't in danger. Not really. Not in that exact moment. But the blood greasing from his torn, frostbitten hands said they all were, sooner or later, and the profound helplessness ended a part of him. All Might bled, and somewhere along the way, Japan had forgotten that fact. Shota would never be able to after that night. It would shape what he told the students he never thought he'd have. He would teach them to survive and work together with the knowledge that they were all bracing for impact. The silence after a crash as the mighty fell and the floor opened up beneath them. Shota would never forget the coldness of that night, the sound of sirens not mattering, of knowing when gods battled, humans meant nothing. He couldn't move. He couldn't hope. All around the city, dozens of phones locked up, lit up, and people started moving. There was no news story. No, there was a story. Gas leak, explosion, the leveling of two city blocks in the Shiodome district with extensive damage of electrical components. Mixed use, residential and business. Tragic. People died. But a chance gathering of heroes summoned by an outdated hero app was able to lead the evacuation and minimize loss of life. Foundations were being inspected for the cause of the break and ignition. No way to tell which of the top 10 triggered the initial emergency signal, but thank goodness some heroes didn't clear their apps very often. More on app security at 8 p.m. Stay tuned. Shota watched, but there was no news. The sunrise the next day was pale, like the sticky pink gashes on Shota's flayed palms, as he sat by his window, listening to the perpetual rising wail of sirens and unable to close his eyes. He stared at the card and then shut it in his bedside drawer and went to the clinic and back to work. It was what he would have wanted. If the symbol of peace died, how would they know? Who would tell them? He moved through his routine in a surreal haze, nauseated with fear. It felt like a dream or a nightmare. Hizashi and Nemuri asked, but he could only offer them snapshots. All Might fighting looked bad. Didn't look like a gas break. Blood. Villain, evacuation, PIN override. I know no one uses it. I don't know. It felt like he was constantly shaking his head. I don't fucking know, okay? When it was announced that All Might had embarked on a well-deserved vacation, Shota wanted to laugh out loud. When he was spotted and painstakingly documented distributing basketfuls of souvenirs to the All Might Tower staff, 2 weeks later, grinning and waving and joking about coconuts, the worst of Shota's anxiety quieted. He didn't see All Might for months. Nobody did. Though nobody seemed to really notice. He kept getting called away for this and that, always out of the country, and surfaced, apologizing profusely for his absence, only to disappear into Might Tower again. The city and the people in it moved along, oblivious. They were waiting for spring, and then for summer. Festivals, birthdays, elections. But in the middle of the night, Shota kept staring out at Might Tower and the 50th floor, wondering if anyone was looking back. 3 p.m. on a Thursday, Shota bit the bullet and walked through the front doors of the tower for the first time since he had toured as a UA student. It was just as he remembered it, which meant he still felt very, very small. The entrance hall was roughly the size of an aircraft hangar, with soaring ceilings and white marble flooring, glass-encased merchandise from all different eras lining the walls, and smiling uniformed secretaries were already waving at him from across the foyer. Despite the hubbub, his footsteps echoed. He hardly had to say anything, which was good. He had barely flashed All Might's card, along with his hero license, and he was ushered from one tier of employee to another, with an alarming degree of efficiency. Then closed into an elevator and sent up. Very up. 49th floor. On the left, he was told, would be a conference room. An associate would join him shortly. Take any seat, please, sir. Thank you for your service. We hope you enjoy your visit to Might Tower plus Ultra. The higher he got, the more he fidgeted. He watched the numbers tick by until the elevator slid to a stop with barely any bounce, and the brushed steel doors opened onto an elegant, minimalist lobby. More brushed steel. It didn't seem like him, strangely. Shota stepped out, but when he looked to the left to find the conference room, what he saw was a thin, primly suited man pushing someone in a wheelchair. It was a very sick someone, crowned with a spray of scarecrow yellow hair. The man's head was down, possibly asleep from the hunch of his body. A thick blanket covered his lap, and an IV bag hung above the chair itself, wagging slowly as they moved across the marble. Hey. Shota honestly hadn't meant to say anything, much less something so curt and impolite, but it came out anyway. The assistant looked up at him, pushing his glasses up his straight nose. Then his eyes blew wide behind the lenses, hand stiffening minutely on the handles of the chair. And the seated man raised his head as if sensing the disturbance. He was gaunt, a glint of blue barely visible in the craters above his exaggerated cheekbones. But Shota still saw his eyes widen, and the man suddenly duck his head again, raising a frail arm to his mouth and coughing wetly. Seeing all this, Shota wanted nothing more than to bolt. Why was he so unnerved? Despite intruding on this unexpected scene, he had never imagined All Might's private meeting area to be this quiet. It felt like someone had died. Sorry if I startled you, he said to either of them, or both of them, keeping his voice low and inclining his head. He hardly needed an excuse to feel unwelcome or out of place in these marble halls. I didn't intend to. The staff sent me up here. I'm a licensed hero. Do either of you have any idea where All Might is? The assistant looked down, and to Shota's surprise, it was the man in the chair who spoke, voice hoarse. He's not in the office right now, he mumbled, gaze pinned on the gleaming floor. A spot of blood marred his thin lip, and bandages layered his long neck. His hands rattled in his lap. And isn't likely to come back soon, unfortunately. Shota nodded, knowing a polite corporate fuck-off when he heard one. He didn't have any room for disappointment. It was enough to know he was actually alive, if elsewhere. That's what he came for, wasn't it? Time to leave. In his periphery, the wheelchair-bound man doubled with a squeezed sound of pain, grasping his left side, and his attendant ducked to murmur in his ear and fiddle with some part of the contraption holding the fluid bag. Shoto pushed the elevator button twice.
"Did you... sir, please, did you want to tell him something?"
Against his better judgment, Shota turned, perplexed at the sudden, panicked tone. The man looked ashamed to be seen, quickly hiding his mouth under a big hand that looked scabbed and bitten to shit by repeated IV line placement. The attendant was determinedly looking to the side, face grim.
I'm his secretary, Yagi Toshinori."
The name barely made it out, croaked and choked in the same shame. Or maybe just the blood in his throat. He didn't look well. He didn't look like he belonged anywhere but the hospital. Judging by the look on his attendant's face, who was now glaring down at him, he wasn't alone in that thought.
"Yeah,"
Shota said quietly, tugging at his capture weapon. He stared at the floor and reached for something to tell the desperate man, because for some reason he felt the need, the pull. While he hadn't counted on meeting All Might, he also hadn't counted on being asked to have a message ready and waiting to eventually be ferried to him. And why the fuck would they tell him anything more than what they told the news outlets? Why was he even here?
"Just that I hope he's okay," he mumbled at last. "We haven't seen him around, and..."
Aizawa winced inwardly. He could hear how stupid he sounded, like a fanboy, all while a multitude of unfamiliar emotions banged around inside his chest. He didn't know what to say to express all of it, or even any of it. How much All Might had occupied his mind since that winter night. How he was worried. So he shook his head, stifling a tense sigh in the coils of his capture weapon.
"I hope he's okay, is all. He deserves a break."
An odd look crossed the secretary's face, and his shadowed eyes closed.
"I'll relay the message," he said with a slight bow of his frazzled head. Then, softer, "Thank you."
Shota nodded, at a loss of what else to do. The attendant settled his grip on the chair and said something about getting on their way. Maybe to attend a medical appointment. Shota hoped so, at least. The man looked to be on death's doorstep. He had never seen wrists so thin, almost comparable to the IV lines snaking out of them. They parted, and the man, Yagi, raised an enormous hand, speaking just louder than the steady squeak of the wheels.
"I'm sure he'll appreciate that you stopped by, Eraserhead. He was a fan of yours."
Shota was already in the elevator by the time the words clicked in his head, but he still turned and looked around, gazing, spooked, into the now empty waiting room. The secretary and his assistant were gone, and a perplexing feeling, just short of panic, had unexpectedly taken root in his stomach, which was echoing like the marble room. How, exactly, did All Might's secretary know who he was? The wheelchair locked into place as they rounded the corner, guided by All Might's deft, thin fingers. If he was really looking for a driver, he supposed there couldn't be a better choice than one with a precognitive quirk. There was never a crack in the sidewalk that Night Eye didn't see. But when his devoted sidekick drew in a breath above him, Yagi Toshinori shook his head.
"I don't want to hear it,"
he said, little more than a croak. He closed his eyes, remembering his manners, or maybe just his exhaustion. "Please." He almost heard Night Eye purse his lips, a very habitual gesture, most commonly spotted when Toshinori was doing something stupidly brave or bravely stupid. Even as his life, an overstatement, had shrunk so drastically since he came out of the coma, he was still amazed at how many opportunities to do stupid things presented themselves. They weren't so much brave anymore. Angry, maybe, but still stupid. A great many things became stupid, or dangerous,
when you were almost dead and trying to pretend you weren't. A part of Toshinori was still convinced he would be trying to walk if the strict man wasn't towering over him, one hand on his IV bag.
"I don't have anything more to say,"
Nighteye said, clipped. There was a pause as he fiddled with something, and when he spoke again, his voice was uncharacteristically soft.
"Nothing more than before."
Toshinori didn't want to hear it. He couldn't see past this painful moment, which was a moment already months removed from where so much of his life had ended. It was all gray space. He couldn't hope. He couldn't reach, with his bandages swaddled so tight, his IV lines so short and tearing at him if he attempted to move faster than a crawl. He was dying inside his body, strangled by tubes and hidden from the sun, so it was an insult to any light remaining in his mind when Nighteye pushed.
"He will be waiting for you," he said simply. "I see him, with tired eyes and a clipboard in his hand. I don't know how, I don't know where, but he will need you. So please, Almight-sama."
"Take us up, my friend," Toshinori heard himself say. All Might. The name was a dagger in his dissected gut, and bile soured his mouth, blood striping his cracked lip. After a moment, Nighteye sighed and pushed, as was his job. It was his job, specifically, because in this state, Toshinori was incapable of even propelling the chair to the elevator. It was pathetic, asking someone to take him anywhere when the rush of the wind against his face was still so fresh. He didn't want it to happen that way. His name, his real given name. Why did it have to be that way? Here, now? Why couldn't he have had this one thing for himself after all he'd done? Toshinori closed his eyes, raising shaking fingers to mop at the sudden wetness on his cheeks. He couldn't feel it, for the drugs cooling his skin and bearing his mind away into the gray as the IV line glugged haltingly above him. Far away. "I need to be alone, I think. I'm very tired and..."
"All Might Sama?"
Nighteye's voice was afraid. Silly, he knew the timeline, had the numbers, and yet... such a kind man. "It hurts," he managed after a moment, deep voice cracking.
"What hurts?"
Nighteye asked, strict. Toshinori's lip trembled. "Everything." But not enough to kill him. Never enough to kill him. And that was enough to make Toshinori smile for the first time in weeks. It was nothing like All Might's smile. It was nothing fit for cameras. Just a jerk of his blood-stained mouth, thinned with the suffocating bitterness of a gruff young hero's pity call. As the sedative took hold, Toshinori eased into darkness, hoping that Eraserhead was doing well for himself and staying safe. He was going to be a great hero, he was sure of it. He had a sense about these things. If only he could be around to help. If only. If only they'd had a little more time while he was handsome and strong. Maybe he could have convinced the young man that he was worth liking, that they had things to talk about and learn from each other. It was a fool's dream, but maybe. Dreams were all he had now, and the sleeping medication ruined even that. Tears cooling in his eyes, All Might faded away.